Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Monday, September 7th. I'm very pleased to be introducing you today to Ben from the Homesteads and Homeschools podcast. Ben, the website, homesteadsandhomeschools.com, by the way. Ben is a father of four. He's a former public school teacher, and he has this website about, wouldn't you know it, getting out of schools and getting out of cities. And I said, geez, those sound like good ideas this year. So he reached out to me, asked if he could do a 30-minute interview for his show about my background. I took a look at his website, and I was just thrilled that this project exists. And I said, Ben, the new thing, as a matter of fact, is called Swapcast. Have you heard about Swapcast? And when I say new, I mean last 10 years or so. It's when two podcasters get together and they create, through one conversation, two podcasts, one for each podcaster's podcast, Swapcast. I've been doing a lot of these lately. I think you're going to hear another one maybe tomorrow with Richard Grove and Ricky Verandis from The Ripple Effect. So Ben agreed, Swapcast it will be. I tried my best to fulfill what he originally wanted out of the conversation, and I did my best to ask all of the questions to help familiarize you, the School Sucks listener, with Ben and his project and a little bit about his background as well. So part of the reason for the delight of discovering Homesteads and Homeschools is I've been putting together a list of smaller podcasts. And when I say smaller, I'm talking like, you know, smaller than Serial, smaller than the Josh Rogan Experience, like not millions of downloads podcasts. I think the key is shows with accessible hosts, somebody that I could email and get a reply, who create content in one of the four domains of School Sucks topics. And I have, with what we do at SchoolSucksProject.com, tried to create, a comprehensive picture of problems and solutions. Now, this is always a work in progress. We can always do better. We can always talk about more. But the four areas that we cover, and that I'm currently looking to make relationships with other podcasts that do this stuff, and I've got quite a list going, and I'm really happy with it. Number one, as the title of our show suggests, the problem with school. Right? And this includes things like school history, but really, really focused on school news and politics. So think about what, you know, Corey DeAngelis does with his work. He'll be on the show tomorrow, by the way, and you might hear that by the end of the week as well. And then we move on to solutions. So the second big topic is alternative education, which would include homeschooling, unschooling, alternative school models like Sudbury, new developments like pods or micro schooling, and of course, alternatives to higher ed as well. So any of the podcasts done by our friends at Praxis and Crash would fit into that category. Then the third category would be critical thinking and learning. I would love, if you have a podcast that you listen to that you're really passionate about, please let me know. I made a thread on my Facebook wall, right, with asking people for suggestions, like what are the alternative education and personal development shows that you listen to with accessible hosts. I got a lot of great feedback. If we're already friends on Facebook, go to that thread, should be right near the top of my wall, and add your thoughts. And if we're not friends on Facebook, let's not get into like being friends on Facebook at this point. Just send me an email, which I think is even, you know, more personal. Brett at SchoolSucksProject.com, just say show suggestion. But then, of course, the other category is personal development, right? That's a very red sea, and there's some very popular shows. So again, if you know a show that focuses on personal development, think of like what Jake DeSillis used to do. Jake is now retired, but with The Voluntary Life, our friend Joel has Exponentially Empowered. That's already on my list. But if you know some of those shows that a lot of people might not know about yet, but you really like, it's like a secret you've been keeping, tell me your secret, and I'll put it on a list, and eventually we'll let that secret out together. So I think I will, in the conversation with Ben, talk a little bit about why I'm doing this. I think I left that part in there. And if not, you'll learn soon. And please remember that School Sucks is a listener-supported show. There's two very easy ways to offer your support in exchange for a rich bounty of additional content. To help keep this show going and growing, it has done both of those things this year. You can go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV to see all of the ways that you can do this. Or you can also just go to patreon.com/schoolsucks. Sign up to contribute $1 per content item, And you can have access to every bonus show, just about every bonus show that we've done since 2016. Now, do you need more content right now? Let's have an honest conversation about your need for content right now. Do you need more? No, right? That Tim Pool is blowing up your phone every 10 minutes with his new video. He's like, hey, Greg, your name is Greg in this story. Hey, Greg, look, here's a new video. There'll be another one in 15. He just does this all day. And there's probably 100 people that you know of who are doing, like, nobody is quite Tim Pool, but you have enough content. But do you have enough great content? See, a couple of years ago, I realized that telling people that you will make more media for them to put in their media consumption queue if they give you money, that's not a really attractive proposition. But more great content, more revealing content, more content that like perfectly combines education and entertainment. There's always room for that, I think. So we used to just F around after like doing live shows on LRN, and I would throw that up and say, look, more content. And I apologize for doing that. Now, through shows like The Discomfort Zone, which we did, gosh, almost 50 great episodes of that, In Pursuit of Utopia, that's been going on for a year at this point. Kevin Cole has joined us, and we're having some just absolutely amazing and challenging conversations there. And of course, even though there are only, I think, 8 episodes of Picture of the Month Club, those shows, as far as if you like the production quality of School Sucks, Picture of the Month Club is School Sucks on steroids, but really also high quality liposomal vitamins, that's fat soluble vitamins, but also wheatgrass juice, and just a sprinkling of angel dust to keep things interesting. That is Picture of the Month Club. I wanted to create supporter-only content that I thought was truly worth listening to. Like, it is a true reward. And now this new show with Nathan Frazier, still unnamed at this point, where we look at principles of marketing and tactics of propaganda, compare and contrast, talk about how to use one effectively and defend yourself against the other. Really excited about the evolution of that project as well. So again, that's schoolsucksproject.com/AV. The easiest way to do it is patreon.com/schoolsucks and get access to all the shows I just mentioned. Every episode of all the shows I just mentioned for a $1 per content item contribution. It is greatly appreciated. And also don't forget the full digital downloadable version of the Ideas into Action Summit. The first University Digital Summit is still available. We are building a nice community around that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. We do a discussion group. People bring topics. We go back and forth. We try to, in many of these conversations, we try to apply some of the tools and lessons of Ideas into Action to what is happening in the world right now. I've had a couple of recent conversations with presenters in the summit. They want to get in on these Monday, Wednesday, Friday calls periodically as well. So I really like the way this is finally shaping up. You know, we did this as a live presentation crammed into one weekend back in October. That was not the best way to do it. It needs to be an ongoing conversation. It needs to be a community. And that's what we've built now. So if you're interested in that, please jump in. You can learn more about Ideas into Action by going to spuniversity.com/ideas into action. And of course, it's linked in the show notes for every episode as well. Check out what we put together. See if it's right for you. I hope to see you as an attendee in these future discussion groups. Those talks, those conversations are also open to Richard Grove's entire autonomy group. So they are often very well attended and quite lively at times. And it's, you know, it's an evolving thing. And you'll get there. And the first 5 minutes, nobody will say shit. Right? Everyone's a little nervous. But then somebody breaks the ice. I go on a rant that gets other people all in ranty moods. And it's a wonderful way to spend my Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. Couple things you can be looking out for. What's coming up this week? Wednesday, I have Corey DeAngelis. We had to postpone from last week. He had a writing deadline he had to meet. This Friday, Professor CJ returns. I'll be asking him, how's college this year, CJ? He's a professor. And we'll be talking about a couple of bigger, broader topics as well. Swapcast with Richard Grove and Ricky from The Ripple Effect. And then Monday, Wes and I will resume our Integrating the Individual series. So there's still plenty of time. That's almost a week away. Plenty of time for you to send questions or comments that we can incorporate into the show. That's everything. Please remember to check out Ben at Homesteads and Homeschools. He has a lot of great conversations on his show about self-sufficiency in education and, as the homestead suggests, self-sufficiency beyond education as well. So please check out his work. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. You'll hear from me again soon. Thanks for listening, and take care. So, welcome to both of our shows, Ben.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Welcome to Homesteads and Homeschools as well.
We actually have a mutual friend, Nikki P. from Cleveland, who is a podcaster himself. He hosts the show Peace Freaks. How do you know that sweet young man?
Well, we host a show called Free Markets, Green Earth.
Oh, yeah.
So, taking a look at environmental issues. Sort of, but more through a free market perspective. You know, how the EPA does things worse than the market might, or doom and gloom problems out there, and why they are doom and gloom and why they're not really doom and gloom. Yeah, just started doing some reviews of Captain Planet, so remind you of your childhood. You
know? Indeed. So you started this podcast, what was it, back at the beginning of 2019? And I was like, there is a guy who is out ahead of things nicely.
Yeah, it's been a wild time, really. It hasn't affected us too much, you know, because we're kind of out of it. But just seeing people, cousins and relatives, going through the whole distance learning fiasco.
Has anyone asked you for your advice about, like, what to do as a homeschool parent, which is something that we're going to get into?
Not really. I mean, like, within like our local community, you know, some people have questions. A few people randomly will reach out, and, you know, part of what I try to do with my show, right, is it's not, this is how you do it. It's, well, this is how this person does it, and that's how this person does it. And maybe somewhere in there you can glean something that might work for you, you know, or spark some idea in your brain that you want to try.
And you're a parent of four children.
Yeah, we have four children. Our old, so right now we're homeschooling our oldest two. Our youngest two are 6 and 4, and we adopted them 3 years ago, coming up on 3 years. They are going to be at the public school this year for first grade and pre-K. And that has been quite an interesting decision-making process. It's one of those where I'm really very hesitant to do it, but at the same time, I think some of those relationships haven't progressed to the point where we are able to truly engage in like a homeschool. I think as a child, right, when you have a kid from day one and they're born and they know your parent, right, they know you love them, they know you're there for them. Mm-hmm. And so when you have to have tough conversations and do all those things that come and be a teacher and less a parent, they're there for that. They're understanding of that. And I think we're kind of running into some walls with that. We don't quite have the relationships built up to where they need to be. And I think there might be some, you know, some other underlying stuff that might be of use. Or the plan is to get them out either at the end of this year or next year, depending on how it all goes.
Yeah. So I had, I run these discussion groups for my university virtual summit every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we were having a conversation this morning, and this one guy is actually a public school teacher. And we were talking a lot about preparation. And on the parenting side, getting ready to send a child into the system right now, I know it might be a little tougher because it is first grade and you don't have a lot of experience with this. And your oldest is like 10, right? And you were
he's 10,
from the start.
Yeah, he went to kindergarten.
Right.
And that was when we, after that, it was all right. We're, you know, homeschooling.
So what's it like on the parenting side as you get these two ready to go to public school now with everything that's going on?
There are so many parts of it. It's just, it's really absurd. Just, it's scary. It's scary, not for the reasons that I think main population would be freaking out, but it's like they have to wear these colored lanyards and, you know, kids with masks and just trying to, you're not allowed in the building as a parent. I can go into the office, but that's it. After that, they're on their own. I can't drop them off the first day and walk them to their classroom. I can't walk them down the hallway. I can't get out of the car. And that's scary, I think. And I don't know how we're going to do that. We've talked about it already, but, you know, talking to a 4-year-old, it's not going to matter too much come Tuesday morning.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely transfers a lot of additional power, it seems, just from what I've gathered so far in the conversations that I've had. It's transferring a lot of power away from parents into the schools on top of what the schools already had.
Yeah.
Do you feel optimistic about, I'm going to bet, and maybe I'm wrong, but are you familiar with Jack Spierko, Survival Podcast?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Jack's been doing these shows recently on megatrends, and one, or maybe they're not even shows. Maybe he's just writing articles, because what I read were articles, but I'm sure he's talked about it on his podcast. I haven't listened recently. One was about K through 12. And then he did another one about higher ed and how these things are contributing to a coming economic collapse. And he kind of explains the causality of this. But he, as somebody who's obviously very supportive of homeschooling like we are, certainly sees a silver lining in that the current situation, I think he punctuates one of his articles by saying, this whole thing, this COVID thing is killing what's already dying as far as like institutions are concerned. And obviously school is one. These trends were in motion before this even happened. But polls have shown like 40% parents are now, they say they're more likely, and I don't know what more likely translates into as far mm-hmm. as actually how many kids are going to be pulled out of school. I had a really hard time pinning down actual numbers. I know it was around 2.5 million last school year were homeschooled. Jack's projections, and you know, he's done a lot of research on this, in a couple of years, it'll be up to 10 or 15 million people. So that's why I, you know, looking what you're doing, which is basically about how to get out of the government education system and how to get out of cities.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who's out ahead of this thing nicely. But what are your thoughts as far as like optimism, as far as what's happening now, considering you're probably having, or you have been having since like April or May, conversations with people about what's going to happen come fall with public school?
Yeah. I think when it first started out, I was kind of optimistic that this would help kind of wake people up. You know, they see the distance learning stuff come home. They see the schoolwork come home. They realize how much time is either wasted in school or how much busy work stuff that's you know, that's not necessarily applicable to life or education beyond knowing a fact because somebody somewhere says I need to know it. As that's gone on, I feel like it's kind of, people have lost that. People see it and are more annoyed or frustrated that they're the ones having to do it now. And they just want to get them back into school and let the teachers take over and start doing their thing again.
Right.
You know, I have talked to, I'm trying to get a couple of people on the show that have decided to homeschool since having the school shut down, since doing the distance learning. They're new at it and they're a little more apprehensive, I think, to come on and talk about it and share their story, but they are there. And I think it's something that homeschooling is one of those things you have to make sacrifices. You have to have one parent stay home, or, you know, you have to figure out a schedule that allows parents to work. And I would love to say that everybody should homeschool. I don't think that everybody is necessarily cut out to do it or able to do it. I don't know. It's one of those, I've been having that discussion like in my brain recently, like, you know, should everybody homeschool? What does that look like? Is there something you can salvage out of the public school system? And this whole COVID thing kind of spurred that on a little bit.
Sure.
Kind of just wondering your thoughts on school, homeschool, and what's the end goal? You know, what do you want to see the whole school system shut down and broken down into homeschooling, co-ops, and that sort of thing? Is there a place for a public education system that might be, you know, more localized, more powers in the local governments as opposed to the federal government?
Yeah, it was interesting. This came up in the discussion I was having this morning as well. Somebody said, hey, is Bill Gates trying to meddle in public schools in New York? And I said, he's not just trying, he's been invited to meddle in public schools in New York. And I think there was a lot of protest. This story actually surfaced maybe in May, where Governor Cuomo invited, you know, Bill Gates to bestow his wisdom on the future of education, to reimagine education in New York. And Bill Gates has actually a lot of experiments with smaller schools that still basically follow all of the strictures of public school. And they also set a criteria for what made a successful school. And it came down to something like good attendance, ready for college and able to pass two like competency tests. So not much of a reimagining, right? Just kind of applying, like the reimagining, I guess, is imagine a smaller building, imagine more teachers and less kids kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Some of the cynicism that I'm feeling right now as I'm watching kids go back to school and I'm watching, you know, all of the rules and regulations now incorporate all of the COVID stuff. A lot of people, a lot of teachers, and I really feel for teachers and I really feel for parents in this situation. So I don't want to come across mm-hmm. as sounding judgmental. I'm sure this is a terribly difficult thing to deal with. And I'm, you know, a lot more people are working from home now, which is great, which gives them more opportunities. And I was also really hoping that the bringing school home last March would have two positive effects, even if one of them seemed negative at first. The one that seems negative at first you brought up, which is like parents are going, what the hell is going on here? My kid can do all this work in 2 or 3 hours. Why are they in this place? Mm-hmm. You know, that's sucking like all it was. That's in the name of school sucks. How much money is sucked away from other educational options just by the fact that people are forced to pay for their schools, which basically closes a door to them. You know, if you're a homeowner in a community and you're paying, you know, whatever it is, 50% of your property tax goes to the schools, how open are you to options in a situation where the money is not going to follow the child, right? Where there's not going to be school choice, where there's not going to be a voucher system. How open would you be to looking at other options? Or in addition to your property tax bill, thinking about shelling out for even something like private school, which is as far as people, most people, I think, get in consideration of alternatives. But seeing that there is a tremendous amount of waste going on, that son or daughter goes off to school for 9 hours and then for some reason comes home with 2 or 3 more hours of work, and now under parental supervision, all of the schoolwork can be completed in 2 or 3 hours a day, giving kids this tremendous opportunity of their own time, right? Giving them their own lives back to an extent. There's a silver lining of it. But parents saying, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of waste here. But also on the time freedom side, people had this opportunity. And again, I'm borrowing Jack Spierko's language here in his article. People had the opportunity to test drive something. Yeah. Right. Now, you pointed out, I heard a podcast that you did with Julie Borowski, and at the end of it, you were talking about, this was probably months ago, right? And you said, what is being called homeschooling right now is not homeschooling. There are opportunities beyond what you're currently calling homeschooling. The school has been transferred into the home. To switch back to the cynical side of this, you know, one of the things that people have said about the phenomenon of so many people working remote now is that the barrier between work life and home life is gone. And I think there was a threat that the barrier between home life and school life would be gone. If, I don't know, kids didn't assert themselves, and Jack talked about this in one of his articles, his grandson realized the opportunity. Like, oh, I'm not trapped in this concrete building all day. Look at all the things that I could be doing. So at this point, looking at what happened over the summer, and I think I'll be able to make a more informed decision after a couple months of the 2021 school year go by, I do not think school has the agility to adjust. I mean, what does effectiveness mean in the schools anyway? Right. But they're not going to be able to effectively deal with these new challenges. And I hope a lot more people do look for outside of school entirely kinds of options here. So you mentioned smaller schools. I'm really excited about the developments with these learning pods where a teacher or somebody qualified to teach just grabs, you know, a handful of kids, like 5 kids. And states are cracking down on this too. I've seen articles about Massachusetts cracking down on pods, and teachers need to be certified for more than 5 kids and you can't take payments. but that's a positive development. Carrie McDonald from Fee, we talked about micro schooling. I think that was even last year. I think that was 2019 before any of this started to happen. So micro schools, especially if they're if they have some kind of niche, right? People come together around some kind of common interest, and then mm-hmm. you know, other content areas are just kind of delivered around or through that community. I think all of those things are really, really positive developments. And now there is this moment where between 50 and 60 million kids are getting a chance to test drive some other form of education, right? Some kind of outside of schooling And if it's just transferring school to the home, the using the word education is debatable, but they're going through the motions of school, which most people feel is synonymous with education still somehow. And they're seeing that there's another way to do it. Obviously, the parents are seeing that as well. And there might start to be some serious questions about why this system eats up so much time and money. And I think all of those are potentially very, very positive developments. But I think the school system will fight it to the end. And last thing on that, a lot of that obviously has to do with all of the economic interests. I mean, there are so many companies that are just set up around serving the schools, technology equipment, books, construction, all of these things where it's kind of like, if the future of this is uncertain, all of those businesses are going to take a hit. How many teachers could wind up unemployed over the next couple of years? Yeah. How do they transition into other careers? And what happens to their pension funds? Like the dominoes that could fall in all different directions, just from this initial knock of the COVID thing. It's hard to predict, but it's certainly pretty ominous as far as like the future of school is concerned, I think.
I hope so, right? It's tough. It is tough. When you throw that economic wrench into things and you start thinking about, the contracts involved and the teachers and the teachers union and the pensions and all that, it can get sticky. But I think at the end of the day, the system we're currently using isn't working.
And that's the problem too, is that the system extends so far beyond just like what is education for children. It's like, what is daycare for parents?
It's true. Like really, when you look at school and you look at how it's progressed and the amount of time and what it has become, it really is just, it's daycare. It really has become more of a daycare system, and how many schools have, after school programs. And I know it's tough, man. It's tough. Like there are days when it's, you wish you had somebody else raising your kids. But at the end of it, I think it's a worthy venture for sure to try to give your kids that what they need.
Oh, I mean, I totally hear what you're saying. Even, I always do have to point out that I'm not a parent, but I've been in plenty of relationships, and I know one of the things that maintains, the healthy function of a relationship is space, right? A kind of predictable, planned departure. Mom gets away from dad. Mom gets away from the kids. The kids get away from dad. Like all of these things have to happen, I think, to some extent. And people also need to, especially when they're young, have some kind of individual experience, which is another thing that I think school really takes away from them, if you consider the time commitment that it has been. And what, for many kids, this situation has given them back. I've talked to my niece, who is like 12, a whole bunch about this. And there's certainly aspects of school that she misses, like obviously at that age, the social piece is super, super important. I've had other conversations with friends who have older kids who are like worried about, how is my daughter going to find someone to date? There's no social scene. And again, it's like, that's the problem of this system that's doing too many things. Like this is your social life. It's kind of like people talk about religious cults. And I hate to do this. Sorry, school. I hate to compare you to religious cults. Sorry, all the people who work in school, you're not cult members. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's kind of like a religious cult in that one of the things that a cult aims to do is have a kind of full spectrum dominance over the participants, right? Where if you leave the cult, what do you have? Who are you going to play soccer with if you're not in the cult, right? Who are your friends going to be? How are you going to find someone to marry? Where are you going to get spiritual guidance? Where are you going to learn things? It's, the cult and then this scary sort of unclear world outside of it. So school has become an institution that over the last century is reaching into more aspects of the personal life, of the family life, of the community life. It affects, obviously, people's attitudes towards work. There's lots of, especially when I was a tutor working in, wealthy areas outside of Boston, there were situations where both parents did not need to be working, right? And they were just totally outsourcing educational enrichment to me, a practical stranger who they were paying. And that didn't need to be the case. And again, it's hard to not feel judgmental when like dad is a president of a bank and mom is, runs some kind of nonprofit and they hardly spend any time with their own children. Like it's hard not to be judgmental in having seen that so many times where it's like, what are these people trying to attain? What are they trying to keep up with? And that frustrated me. Back then, especially when I saw how it's like, oh, you're in good hands with Mr. Brett, How do you know, right? It's the same thing. How do you know they're in good hands at Needham High School, where you shuffle them off to, 7-8 hours every day?
I think, like you said, with the religious cult trying to dominate everything. And one of the issues that we'll see, like with this whole COVID thing and the distance learning, I think people are getting a bad taste, or people that think that this was homeschooling, think that this is what homeschooling will be, this distance learning thing, if they take that plunge. And like, it's not, all the social stuff, right? Like all those social scenes that existed before have been shut down. And like when you're homeschooling your kids, like you can go play soccer, you can go to church, you can go hang out at the Denny's for pancakes, whatever it is, those things are all there. And so you get that stuff. And I think that, yes, school is a social structure, but if we weren't all being locked down, I think we would find those social structures outside. That wouldn't be one of the big longings to get back to school for kids. Cause I know I've talked to kids too that have been like, I want to go back because I want to see my friends. I haven't seen my friends in 6 months, who can blame them? And it's hard to, you don't want to judge people because we all make different decisions. And, but it is when you're outsourcing, you're using the school, when you're using, an individual tutor as your parenting, it makes you question a little bit. I'm like, man.
I should say that I was qualified to do something that a lot of parents weren't qualified to do. If it was like SAT or ACT or SAT 2 or college consulting, like those, I had a specialty that they didn't have. But a lot of tutoring that I did was just academic, right? And it was a feeling. They were just being sent off with me. It just felt like a lack of investment. Well, financially, you live in Needham, Massachusetts, right? In a $500,000 house. What are you paying every year in property tax? 50% of that goes to the school. So you are deeply invested in this thing, but you're not showing any, and I would have conversations with the parents after that would reinforce this. You're not showing any like emotional investment in, and this would be like only child, two kids. Like the parents should have had time, but I just so often got the sense that there was a complete lack of interest and a complete lack of emotional investment in what, for let's say, if you're getting a bill for $30,000 or $40,000 a year for this thing, what is it? What are you paying for? There weren't a lot of questions or a lot of curiosity around that.
I think the stigma around school, right? You go to school, the teachers they'll have their masters. Some of them have their PhDs. They're so well-versed in all these topics. And, your student has to learn this from the teacher because they're the only ones capable of knowing this information. And I think to some degree, parents are kind of scared off of that, right? I'm not qualified to do that. Like, that's not my background. I'm a doctor and I can check your reflexes, but I can't teach you math or Civil War history. You know what I mean? I think they're kind of, sometimes parents are scared off of that, or it's made to seem that you're not an expert and you have to be an expert to do that stuff. And it's hard. It can be hard. As kids get older, it gets tougher, but there's a million resources out there that you can find and utilize.
Yeah. I mean, that was the monopoly that school had for a long time, was just like, this is the only place where if we want well-rounded individuals, this is the only place that has all of this information and can provide it in a somewhat efficient manner to young people, and that was true until around the time we graduated from high school, when suddenly there was this developing technology that had way more than school had, And then it was like, well, okay, school's the only place that can curate it. So I think that the next step in the development of this is who can position, and lots of people are doing this really effectively already, but who can position themselves as effective curators of information. So you look at something like something that's really niched down to a certain segment, but it's very popular, like the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum. It's like, okay, we've done that, they say, to the people who are interested in the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum. We've put together the comprehensive package of what you need to know. Now, so I don't want to say anybody can do that because school can't do it. And that's a lot of people, but lots of people have this power now to curate information towards some kind of end. And they're probably far more efficient and far more flexible in doing it than the schools are, considering they're still teaching, a lot of outdated information, and the cost of updating information is only driving the bill that taxpayers get up, year after year. And they're still not teaching, I think, most of the important things that people need to know. You're not learning emotional intelligence in school. You're not learning about entrepreneurship. You're not developing better communication and negotiation skills. You're certainly not developing, I would say, effective, independent, critical thinking skills. They certainly use the phrase critical thinking, yep. But in most cases, we're finding it just means agreeing with what authorities tell you.
Yeah, I had a little discussion with someone about that the other day. Just he said schools don't teach children to think critically. And I was kind of chiding back that, like, sure they do. That's what they, you know, that's, I mean, all this stuff is like, I mean, teachers go to, in their, you know, all their master's work that you do, and you're taught to teach kids to think critically. And at the end of the day, it's not at all what it is. You know, and I was thinking about that the other day, the amount of education that goes into a teacher, like learning. And it's mind blowing how much goes into that. And then 5 years down the road, it's wrong. The information that you learned, the teaching techniques you learned or whatever were wrong. And they're being retaught. And I don't know, it made me think how futile some of those degrees are, you know?
There was a point in my life, and I know you initially approached me about talking about my background. And I promise I will answer any questions you have. But there was a point in my life where there was nothing that was more exciting, because the tunnel of possibility was so narrow 17 years ago for me, 16 years ago, that, and that doesn't even seem like that long ago, but the tunnel of possibility with what I could do for my life to feel fulfilled and happy and growing in a career was like, I had to teach history and I had to do it in a public school, right? I had to be in front of people telling interesting stories, you know, building enthusiasm for something that I thought was important. That was how I was going to get meaning. And suddenly I found myself, you know, getting certified and also getting a master's degree simultaneously. And in the master's classes, it was all current teachers in states like Massachusetts and New York. Terrible places to, to do anything really except sightsee. And it just felt like in my early 20s, maybe mid 20s, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of people who are my age or a couple years older. And they're basically just communicating day in and day out that their teaching career is their own personal hell. And that was a shift for me. It was I had a really, really hard time kind of processing that. And it was a difficult period in life for sure, going through that and realizing like what I thought I had been wanting to do for like 4 years, which seemed like a huge chunk of my life then. Not only not the right track, but I might have been going 4 years in the wrong direction, possibly, you know, especially considering like I was a communications major and I was really interested in like broadcasting and all that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was super discouraging. But it was the thing that started to like force me to look more broadly at possibilities. And I wanted to just ask you, because you were a public school teacher.
Yeah.
If you could go from like, I want to be a teacher, for the sake of my audience getting to know you, go from like, I want to be a teacher to like, I'm pulling my kids out of school or my son out of school, or I'm never sending my son to first grade after the experience that he had in kindergarten, which I think is most accurate.
I remember I had a couple of teachers in high school that stuck out that like made me question things. I had one social studies teacher, and it was a fabulous 60s class. It was an elective, and he asked us all on the first day or something, is how I remember it. He may have asked later than that, but George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and JFK, right? Why do we know those names, right? Because George Washington couldn't tell a lie. Abe Lincoln freed all the slaves, and JFK was, I don't know, just this big flashy character. And all those things that we've come to know about our historical figures aren't incredibly accurate at all. And he just started kind of got me questioning all the stuff that I knew, right? Everything that I had learned, and well, is this really what it means, or what's the real truth behind it? And just kind of eye opening. And he made learning fun and interesting. And so I kind of wanted to do that in my own way. Because I had plenty of teachers that were absolute garbage and just, you know, bore the crap out of you, and you know, you'd go take a nap in the back of the class. So I kind of wanted to do that. And I don't know. I mean, I went through, I did my master's work, and I kind of got frustrated with some of the busy work part of it, but it was still things I enjoyed, right? Like I enjoy English. I like writing. I like reading. I enjoy those things. So going further in depth in that, I didn't didn't mind it. Some of the teaching stuff kind of started to annoy me. It just kind of seemed just busy work type stuff, you know, having to write your lesson plan out like 5 minute chunks for the entire day for an entire week and have somebody look at that and check it off and make sure that, you know, what I have on paper is adequate, right? Not are the students getting the right information? Are the students happy and learning and thriving? Are you doing the paperwork correctly? Not to speak poorly of the school that I taught at, lots of nice people, but this was 2010 in Brooklyn. One of the stats that they touted was how many kids they had sent to college, right? Nobody said anything about the retention rate or anything like that, or how many of these kids used their degree afterwards to find a job, or how many came out without massive loans that they probably wouldn't be able to pay back. And we didn't, you know, nobody talked about that. But I remember there was one kid that ended up going to college and he came back, and it was heartbreaking because he was such a gearhead. He could tell you anything about like cars, and like that was what he needed to do. He needed to like go work in a mechanic shop and start his own business and, you know, take that route. And that route wasn't there for him. He couldn't do that. No one would help him down that lane, because we can't have kids doing that. We got to send kids to college. We got to go to school and get 4-year degrees because that's what we need. And you start seeing that more and more, that there's just, I don't know if it's a stigma around kind of blue collar trade that we can't do that, or if it's just this sort of brainwashing of, you know, the system encouraging people to go to school, to take loans out, to get you into that debt system, kind of struck me and made me sad, really. It was just kind of really crappy to see that this kid kind of missed out on something he could have been really, really good at. And then come down here to Georgia. My wife's a doctor and we wanted one of us to stay home with the kids. So that was me. She made more money than I did as a teacher. So I was home and we went to kindergarten, and it just, I don't know. It was a lot. They expected a lot, and it wasn't healthy thing in our eyes. You know, just the lack of communication, the lack of, parental involvement, right? 5 years old, 6 years old, they get there at 8 o'clock and they get picked up at 3 o'clock. Well, I had the luxury of being able to take him in and pick him up. But if he wanted to take the bus, he'd be getting on the bus at 6:30 and getting home at 5 after 4, 10 after four. I mean, that's a work day for an adult, you know, and you're expecting a 5-year-old to be doing that. And it just kind of like, no, we can't do this. And I remember him coming home with stories and, you know, what'd you do today? Or like, you know, and he'd get done with his worksheet and then have to put his head down on the table and wait for the other kids in class to catch up type thing. And it's just that waste of time.
Yeah.
Didn't sit well with us. So we decided to pull him out and give it a shot and see how it went. And we enjoyed it, and kids are thriving, and we're going to keep doing it.
Absolutely. You know, this was one of the things that I found most interesting about your story. There was a blog article on your website, which is homesteadsandhomeschools.com, and it's called Making the Decision. 5 years before, again, this is another non-parent perspective. 5 years before you're deliberating this, I'm a teacher in the 2005-2006 school year. And then in the 2006-2007 school year, I've shifted into this advocacy role for kids as a tutor, and then for older kids, you know, like SAT stuff and college consulting. But I'm now on the kids' side. And to me, it exposed, that transition exposed what an adversarial relationship school actually created between people who are supposedly doing enrichment, enlightenment, at the very least delivering some kind of service, and the actual service recipient. I went through the 2006-2007 school year going, what the hell have I been doing since the year 2001? You know, what have I been involved in? And like, my job had all kinds of other unfortunate functions, like giving kids medication. Mm-hmm. To suddenly be in the child camp, in the family camp, and reevaluate the system from that point of view, I didn't feel great about what I had been doing. So I kind of got that when I was reading your Making the Decision blog article from, I think, a few years ago, that was a real turning point for you too.
The way it flowed, being there, being part of it, and not having I don't know, support's the right word, or just that's the system though, right? Like that's how it's, that's what it's become. I think like you don't have that relationship. Those relationships aren't there anymore because it makes it harder, right? Like it makes it harder to do what you need to do to give the test, to do all the stuff. And you don't want people in your hair getting in the way.
No, I get it. I mean, and that was the thing, because I was reflecting on my experience as like, kids are annoying, parents are annoying, they're in the way of this thing going smoothly, to then suddenly being on the feelings and needs side of them. And it was just like, a very necessary reframing for getting me to where I am today, for sure, was that transition.
And it's tough too, when you're in there, like I subbed for a little while when my daughter was born, my wife was out on maternity leave. And you've seen the teachers that do want to be a part of that, that want to build those relationships with parents or whatever, not being able to do that because they're just being bogged down with whatever else it may be, testing or, you know, drawing up lesson plans or whatever it may be that might not be as necessary as fostering relationships with the families.
I talked to this guy last year who publicly resigned. I think he was in Florida. You know, our conversation got mixed reviews. Like some people felt like he was complaining too much, but I understood his complaints that like, people watch the school budget and then, you know, their subsequent property tax bills go up year after year. And they say, what? Look at all this waste. Look at these teachers living high on the hog. And, you know, you talk to people who work in that profession and they're like, yeah, we wish, you know, like, yeah, our mm-hmm. benefits package is great. The salary works out when you actually compare it to hours worked in a year, but it's not glamorous. And a lot of that money is just going into an expanding administrative budget. So, yeah, and then the teachers are put out in front of it. Like, don't you people care about teachers and children? It's kind of like how soldiers are you. Well, you got to support the troops, right? How else, if you don't support the troops, how are we going to have this war? And then, you know, how are all these banks going to get paid?
That's why I remember that conversation, and I appreciated it. I don't remember the details, but I don't remember coming out of it saying, well, that didn't make sense. I kind of got what he was saying, but I felt like I saw a graph or a chart somewhere, and it showed like, you know, the increase in school dollars and school budget. And when it charted out, it like all that money went to administration. Teachers saw very little of that, all this money that's coming in, all this new money, and it's just going to administration and new administrative positions that could probably otherwise be eliminated and put some of that money back into some of the other things. But that's always a tricky question too, right? Because like when you teach, it's, you know, 8 months and you have your summer off. But at the same time, like your summer's not really off.
Now, I remember in 2005, that summer, I worked probably 50 hours a week at home. I planned the entire year. So when the school year came, forget why I did this. Because I started to, like, in the first year that I worked at this school, it was called Great Expectations, which is not a great name for a school. But I worked at Great Expectations, which I'm sure now is closed. It was a private school. I started to think in the first year that I worked there, I'm like, I could probably pull this off in like less than 30 hours a week, right? Like, because I found myself like staying after school, like planning for the next day, just kind of doing a real like paycheck to paycheck approach with my preparedness. So I took an August, planned out basically an entire year of what I wanted to do after I realized I could basically do whatever. I mean, I was showing kids like Apollo hoax videos and stuff like that. Like, I was really wild. And because I think this is like when YouTube was new, or definitely Google was out. So I was like downloading stuff somehow and putting it on CDs and bringing it into school and like watching it. And the kids were just like, also meeting like kids who didn't know what 9/11 was in 2005. That was an side topic. But I planned out the entire year. It was like a very, adventurous year of history content. And I wound up working like, I think 28 hours a week was about my average. Nice. Yeah. All right. So
good deal.
I want to make good on my promise to answer any questions that you had for me when you originally pitched the idea of doing the show.
I was curious, like when your switch kind of flipped and you're like, okay, maybe this is not such a good idea. Maybe rethink our ideas of what education should look like.
Yeah. And We use that language a lot, and I know I do it too. Like, what was your aha moment? When did the switch flip? What was the turning point? But if you think about like the philosophy that of education that I put out on School Sucks for over 10 years versus what my philosophy of education and life was as a college graduate in the year 2000, it's not just one switch that's flipped the wrong way, right? It's like an entire system that needs to be rewired, it's like, as Bill Gates would call it, a reimagining, right, of everything. It's like everything has to change, like, you know, the concept of the individual, and then like philosophical concepts like collectivism, altruism, all of these, like everything that I had learned up to the age of 21 outside of like reading, writing, and arithmetic needed to be deeply reconsidered. And through that reconsideration, I realized that I, even though by the time I graduated from college, I think this is one of the feature of college, is you think you're pretty smart when you get a 4-year degree, especially if you've had a lot of like education and social topics through like history or economics or sociology or any of those. You think you're coming out of there really, really wise. And, you know, so there I was, 21 years old, thinking I was pretty smart, and immediately began a process of realizing I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And that, aside from the story that I told about realizing that I had been going the wrong way down a career path, it happened at the right time for it to actually be like a really exciting and invigorating thing, because like, you know, Google Video and YouTube were new. And it was funny. I just did a roundtable with the guys who made Loose Change, which was, you know, this movie that I remember seeing as one of the first internet documentaries back in like 2005. And I was like, wow, you know, how amazing. And then there was just this site came up, like top documentary films, I think is the name of the site. And then the explosion of YouTube and the explosion of podcasts. And right at my most curious moment, it was just like, the world was like, here's everything. Good luck sorting through it. But like, the answers are out there if you want to find them. And in the meantime, enjoy the journey. So me gradually waking up between like maybe graduating from college and starting to write down the ideas that became School Sucks Podcast in 2005 and 2006. I was very lucky that it happened when it did.
Yeah. You think about that, what we have, what people that homeschooled back in the 70s and the 80s, what were they doing? What were they using? My gosh, you imagine going to the library and having to get out the Dewey Decimal Card system and find all your stuff.
Yeah, but I also hope they were just as much out in the real world as a lot of people who do unschooling or home education or real world education, you know, are today, I hope. And, you know, interacting with your, being involved in their community, learning cause and effect, you know, like all of those really important lessons, like living and learning are synonyms far more than schooling and learning are, you know, as far as I'm
concerned.
So yeah, you're right. I mean, it's and now it's an even more golden age of opportunity with you know, everything that's available, and more people are at home with their kids all day. More people are motivated to look at alternatives. And while it's you know, people say the scariest time that maybe we've ever lived through, it's also it's really exciting. And I hope that you know, we can continue to be good guides for people who are looking for answers.
I hope so. It's one of those things, you know, it seems scary and it seems daunting at first, but it's what, you know, I think if you're truly invested, like, it, you can do it, you know. There's no reason why you can't homeschool your children and give them a better education than they'd receive in the public school system.
It's in your, it's just kind of like a personal curiosity, and hopefully you find it interesting. How do you feel about the word homeschool? Because you use it in your URL, and I'll tell you what I've learned through the years is that's actually smart. Because, and this is another conversation that I've been having, like, I think I talked to my most recent podcast guest, Wes, about it, but I've also been having lots of private conversations about this. Like, right now, more people than ever before are looking for answers, and they don't speak the same language that I speak, right? Most people don't know the word unschooling or self-directed learning, and they don't know who John Taylor Gatto is, and all the other things they talk about that I think maybe the average person would just find terrifying or offensive, or maybe they would think it was stupid or far-fetched or naive or whatever. But there is a bridge to build between the needs and the fears and the questions that people have right now and the answers that we've probably started to compile through the kinds of work that we do, right? So homeschooling is certainly an imperfect word, but you must have found it useful enough to include it in the name of your show and in your URL. Because I'm trying to come around on it myself.
Yes, no. I had so many like different titles that I was thinking about, and this that one just kind of worked, and I kind of want to leave some words out of it that might scare people, like, you know, liberty or anything like that along those lines, or freedom. That's you know, sort of stuff. Homeschool is kind of fit repetition there with homesteads, and I think it was more of that. I do think the word, like you said, it's imperfect, but I think it's encompassing.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot as what is the translation that I need to make between what I have and what people are looking for? Is it, you know, a kid sitting at a desk not sitting at a desk? Where do you get a desk? He's sitting at his kitchen table, right? With mom's over his shoulder, he's got a stack of books that are old and dusty because, you know, they don't, you don't get new books, you don't go to school. And, you know, something like this is not homeschooling. Right. This is not what we're talking about with homeschooling. I think it's really important that you get people in with that word and then you move them on to better ideas as swiftly as possible.
I think because that was something I kind of noticed on our homeschool journey, right? In the beginning, like there's a progression to getting to that point where you're going to pull your kids out of school. But then there's a progression within the actual process of schooling your own children. You know, like the first time, you know, somebody's thinking about homeschooling their kids and you hit them with unschooling, you know, there's a good chance that they're going to walk away and never think about it again, you know, but that's something that has a lot of value and it's a process to getting there and understanding it, you know. So I think that's kind of one of the things I hope to do, try to do is get some of those other ideas out there within the flow of it all, not scare people off.
Oh yeah, I'm far less into scaring people than I used to be. It's all like I kind of looked at a lot of the stuff I did, you know, going back over the last 15 years, even with teaching, is I wanted to like break people's frames, you know. And I don't think that's necessarily like a constructive thing. I think it was just about some kind of feeling of personal power. It's like, I think why people are attracted to like progressivism, and it's why a lot of people are attracted to libertarianism or conspiracy theory. And then to just be able to stand in front of a room and break people's entire like conception of reality, like how powerful, you know? And now it's kind of like, as the stakes are raised, it's not about being, I mean, I would say this has been true for me for a number of years, but there's far less payoff for being adversarial or, you know, trolling or upsetting people, any of those things. And now we're able to see what people are dealing with in the midst of this crisis, especially around the issue of school and career, which I think is another big part of what I talk about at School Sucks. They're desperate for better solutions. And I'm really committed to just figuring out what's the most effective way to offer them at least a path to the people who have them, because I certainly don't have them all, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people who need to know about educational alternatives or career search alternatives. That's where a lot of my focus has been, like trying to figure that out.
Yeah, it's a worthy search, you know. Somebody's got to curate it all someplace and disseminate it. So.
Well, that's what we're all trying to do, I think. And I was really happy to hear about homesteads and homeschools. And I would definitely, if we have no loose ends, I would just say I definitely look forward to talking more in the future. And your website is Homesteads and Homeschools. Mine is schoolsuchproject.com. Is there anything else you would want people listening to this to do besides listen?
I'm awful at plugging, so no, just go listen and do your thing. thanks for having me on. Thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And you also do the podcast as part of like a podcast network, right? I'm trying to put together like a comprehensive network on the future of education. I've talked to lots of people who I think are making their own unique contributions to this space. So something you'd be interested in, it's definitely a conversation we could have in the future about getting your show involved. And it's there's a lot of things to figure out. I've been working on it for a while, but I was really excited to find homesteads and homeschools. So keep up the great work.
You too. I appreciate it. I've been listening for a while here. So yeah, you too. Appreciate it.